welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden years. I'm Mark Levonier. There's adventure in this hour, later on, from radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. But right now, it's Escape, with their story, The Fourth Man, from August 18th, 1947, on CBS.
Escape! Escape tonight to a raft in the South Pacific. The Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations presents Escape, produced and directed by William N. Robeson. This, the last of the summer series, is The Fourth Man by John Russell. Noumea in the South Pacific. To a generation of French criminals, a word to be uttered in the same terrified breath with Devil's Island. The penal colony at Noumea, where the cutthroats, garrotters, and sadists from the dregs of French society were sent to a living death. Tonight we invite you to escape from Noumea in John Russell's The Fourth Man.
The raft stood to open sea. A mat of pandanus leaves served for its sail, and a paddle of wood for its helm. It was woven of reeds and bamboo sticks lashed upon triple rows of bladders, and it carried four men. Three of them sat huddled together at the far end. Their bodies were blackened with dried blood, and the hair upon them was long and matted. They wore only the rags of blue convicts' uniforms. On wrist and ankle, they carried their mark, the dark and wrinkled stain of the manacles. There was Dubose, doctor, man of the world, murderer.
Friends, the thing is done.
And Fenerou, forger, ladies' man, weakling, coward.
Yes, we've escaped.
And the one known as the parrot, thief and cutthroat.
So far, so good.
And by the way of celebration, gentlemen, may I offer you cigarettes?
Cigarettes? Oh. Doctor, you're a marvel, a magician. Look at them. White and fresh as though they just came from the package.
How did you do it?
Oh, every 6 months there are about 75 escapes from Noumea, and not more than one succeeds. Ours would be that one I knew. And so, 3 weeks ago, I bribed the night guard for these very cigarettes, so that we might sit here, my friends, as we are doing, and celebrate.
I want a light.
A light for the pet.
Our doctor's a wonder. He thinks of everything. He gives us cigarettes, matches, and our freedom.
Wait till you've got your 2 feet on a pavement again. That'll be the time to sound off about freedom.
To wear starched collars again. To stroll with a girl, clean and fresh from her bath, down the Place de la Concorde, the Rue de Rivoli.
Suppose we get a storm.
It's not the season of storms.
Just the same. Suppose we get a storm.
Perroquet, my friend, you must not be so impatient. Remember, we were convicts back there, festering in oblivion. Now we are men raised from the dead.
Suppose we get a storm. You've got a gift of speech, Doctor. But where's the ship that was going to meet us here?
This is the day, as agreed. It will meet us.
The wind will blow us to China if we keep on.
We can't lie any closer to shore. There's a government launch at Torian. And I doubt if the native trackers have given us up.
Careful, Parrot. The natives will eat you yet.
I've heard about that. Is it true, Doctor? That they'll keep all the runaways they can capture to fatten on?
Oh, they prefer the reward still. I doubt if they've entirely lost the habit of cannibalism.
Piece by piece, Parrot. First they'll sample you. Then they'll make a stew out of your brains. Oh, they won't miss a thing.
Shut up, Fenerou. The filthy brutes.
Oh, I almost forgot. We have one of them with us.
The fourth man was steering the raft. He sat crouched in the stern, his body glistening with spray. His huge dark hands held the steering paddle. He was motionless, like an idol, his eyes fixed on the course ahead. The fourth man on the raft.
You are looking at a Canuck, my friend. You will see nothing superior. No line of beauty to redeem the low angle of the forehead, the knobby joints of the body. Nature has stamped him with the mark of inferiority, and he has set the final seal himself with that twist of bark about his middle, that prong of pig ivory through his nose.
Yes, but nonetheless, he's a man, and there is a price on our heads. He could be taking us where he likes.
Calm yourself, Fenarou. This is a very simple animal, an infant, really.
Does that mean he couldn't double-cross us?
It does. He is bound by his duty. I made my bargain with his chief up the river, and this one is sent to deliver us on board our ship. That's the only interest he has in us.
And he'll do it?
He will. That is the nature of the native.
No, I don't trust him, not for a minute.
The brute. The animal. You! It's you I'm talking about. You dirty brute.
Save your breath, parrot. He speaks no language, only a few noises. Few signs.
I don't feel right on the same raft with that.
Well, burn yourselves up in the sun if you like, but me, I'm going to crawl under a mat and get some sleep.
Yes, we should all sleep a little, conserve ourselves. And when we awake, our ship will be here. Our saucy little topsail schooner, a mast standing out against the sky, and we'll be on our way to France. Yes, sleep, my friends.
The two younger convicts dozed under the heat of the day, but not the doctor. He stood once again to sweep the skyline under his shaded hand. His plan had been so careful, so precise. He had counted absolutely on meeting the ship, a small schooner, one of those flitting, half-piratical traders of the Copra Islands that can be hired, like cabs in a dark street, for any sinister enterprise. And there was no ship. And there was no crossroads where one might sit and wait.
Good morning, Doctor.
It's afternoon, Fenarou.
Oh, yes, so it is. I slept like a corpse.
Hey, where's the ship, Doctor? It was going to be here when we woke up.
It will be.
Oh, I'm thirsty. I'm dying with thirst.
So we all, Fenarou.
Where's the flask? I'm roasted in the sun.
You'll just have to roast some more. This crew is put on rations.
What are you talking about? Where's that water?
I have it here.
So you have. Do you think it's yours?
No. It's ours, Parrot.
I want a drink, Doctor.
Think a little, Parrot. We have to guard our supplies like reasonable men. We don't know how long we may be floating here.
Oh, so that's how you talk now. You don't know how long. But you were sure enough when we started.
I am still sure. The ship will come. She cannot stay for us in one spot. She'll be cruising to and fro until she intercepts us. And we must wait.
That's good. Wait. And in the meantime, what? Fry here in this heat, our tongues hanging out, while you deal us out water drop by drop?
Perhaps.
No. The man doesn't live who can feed me with a spoon.
Unless you would die very speedily, we must guard our water. We can only do our best with what we have.
All right, Doctor. Do your best. Give me a drink.
You may have your share, of course. But be warned. When it's gone, don't come to us, to Fenarou and me.
Yes, what's fair is fair.
My drink.
Very well.
Oh, a thimbleful. One thimble.
This way we should have enough for 3 days, maybe more, with equal shares among the three of us.
That's right. There are only three of us.
You were thinking of him, Fenarou, of our pilot? He looks somewhat like us, doesn't he? But his body has never known clothes. His feet, shoes. His heart has never known the swelling that comes with feelings of love or beauty. His mind has never known a single thought. Look at us three, gentlemen. You, Fenero, a forger. You, Parrot, a thief. And I, Dr. Dubose, of Paris and Marseille, a murderer. And yet, we are civilized men, and this is a savage animal. And our provisions are for civilized men only.
The three men awoke to the second day on the raft. They looked and saw the far round horizon and the empty desert of the sea and their own long shadows that slipped slowly before them over its smooth, slow heaving. The land had sunk away from them in the night. The trap had been sprung. As the savage sun kindled upon them with the power of a burning glass, a calm fell, an absolute calm. The air hung, waited. The sea heaved and fell in polished undulations. And the sun shone, driving in under their eyelids like white-hot splinters. They crawled to the shelter of their mats, gasping, shriveling. And the water, the world of water, was slack and thick as oil.
Oh, how lonely it is.
Dr. DuBose.
Yes, Parrot?
Look around you.
What do you mean?
Go on, look around. What do you see?
I see water, Parrot, and the horizon.
What?
Nothing else.
Oh, don't you see a ship? A saucy little schooner? Those were your words. Well, where is it? Why don't you see it?
It will come.
Will it comfort us to be dead when it comes?
You say that you count on your friends, but suppose they leave you to rot here. Leave Parrot and me to rot here. That would be a joke, eh, Doctor? To wait for a ship that will never come?
It will come. My friends will not fail me.
Why? How do you know? How can you be so sure?
There's a safety vault in Paris full of papers to be opened at my death. Those papers contain confessions. No, gentlemen, my friends will not fail me. Parrot. A moment ago, you asked me what I saw.
Well?
There was something I neglected.
What's that?
I see a Canuck on this raft with us. He does not join us. He does not look at us. He sits on his heels in the way of the native, with his arms hugging his knees. He sits at the stern, motionless, under the shattering sun, gazing out into vacancy. Whenever I raise my eyes, I see nothing else. Only this Canuck.
He seems to be enjoying himself quite well.
I was thinking so myself.
The cannibal. The savage.
He does not seem to suffer.
What's going on in his brain? What does he dream of there? He looks as though he hates us.
A dirty rat.
Maybe he's waiting for us to die. Maybe he's waiting for the reward. At least he wouldn't starve on the way home. He could deliver us piece by piece.
How does he do it, Doctor? Hasn't he any feeling?
I've been wondering. It may be that his fibers are tougher. His nerves.
But we've had water, and he hasn't.
And yet, see his skin. It's moist and fresh.
And his belly, fat as a football. Don't tell me this savage is thirsty. Is there any way he could steal our supplies?
Certainly not.
Suppose he has his own supplies, hidden.
What?
We'll see. Search the raft.
Come on, we learn his secret.
Here, look under the mats.
Tear it apart.
I'll push him aside.
Anything there?
No.
Gentlemen,
no.
Gentlemen. We were mistaken. He has nothing hidden.
You're wrong about him, Doctor. You say he has no understanding. There's one thing he can understand. Pain.
Parrot, now come on. Ouch! That's enough!
This, come. That'll teach you. Not so chipper now, are you? Not so happy with your luck. That'll make you feel...
Well, Parrot, you feel better now, don't you? Superior. Come back, my friends. Come back under the mats. The glare of the sun is not so bad there.
Oh, idiots.
What's the matter with our parrot now?
Idiots. Why do we look and look? The schooner can't help us now. If we're becalmed, then they are too.
Doctor, is that true?
Yes. We must hope for a breeze first.
Well, then why didn't you tell us we trust you? Why do you keep on playing out the farce?
You are wise, Doctor. You are very wise.
Put down the knife, Parrot.
You know things we don't, and you keep them to yourself. All right, but be careful. If you think you'll use your wisdom to get the best of us, be careful, Doctor. Because I still have the knife.
And so the days dragged by, the second, the third, and now it was the fourth day, and still there was no breeze, and still there was no ship.
Oh, Doctor.
Yes?
What do you stare at?
At him. At him, the native.
The Canuck. Why?
Look at him. And look at us. We are dying. Our powers are ebbing.
And him?
Naked, wild, brutish. He has yet to give the slightest sign of complaint or weakness.
Doctor, is this a man or a fiend?
A man. It is a man.
A miracle.
It is a man and a very poor and wretched example of a man. Why, you'll find no lower type anywhere. Look at his cranial angle, the high ears, the heavy bones of his skull. Why, he's scarcely above an ape.
Then what?
He has a secret.
A secret?
But we see him. Every move he makes, every minute. What chance has he for a secret?
Absurd. Here are we three, children of the century, products of civilization. And here is this savage who belongs before the Stone Age. Is he to win this struggle? Absurd.
What kind of secret?
I can't say. Perhaps some method of breathing. Some strange posture he uses to cheat the sensations of the body. Such things are known among primitive peoples. Known and jealously guarded. Like the properties of certain drugs. The uses of hypnotism. Who knows?
We can know. We can find out.
Would you ask him? Useless. He would not tell. Why should he? We scorn him. We give him no share with us. We abuse him. And so he falls back upon his own expedients. They are the means by which he has survived from the depth of time, by which he may yet survive when all our wisdom is dust.
There are a number of ways of learning secrets. I know them all.
It would be useless. How could he stand any torture you might invent? You saw how he behaved before. No, no, that's not the way.
Oh, listen to my way. I'm tired of all this talk. You say he's a man. All right, then he has blood in his veins. At least we could drink.
No, it would be too hot. It would be salt.
Well, kill him then and throw him over the side. Let's be rid of the thing.
We gain nothing.
Then what do you want?
I want to beat him. That's what I want. To beat him at the game. For our own sakes, for our racial pride, we must. To outlast him. To prove ourselves his masters. Watch him. Watch him closely, my friends.
Watch? I'll watch, all right, my good doctor. I'm not sleeping anymore, and leave you alone with that bottle.
The bottle? The bottle?
I've been meaning to discuss our rations with you.
Have you?
We're running very short. I'm afraid we must cut down again.
And what are we cut to?
Half a thimbleful.
No.
We must keep our wits.
I say no.
All right. Then we'll put it to a vote. You say no. I say yes. Fenarou.
Yes. Yes, anything, but give me mine now.
Then it's half a thimbleful for Monsieur Fenarou. Your share, Fenarou.
More, I'll die. Give me more.
No more today.
You must. Doctor.
No more today.
Look, a ship.
Oh, at last.
Where is it? I don't see any ship.
It's a trick. Look, Fenarou. He has the bottle. You dirty thief.
Look at him. You killed him with that oar.
What about the bottle?
Yes, there's some left. You caught him just in time.
And you caught the bottle just in time.
It seems I did.
And there is no ship. There will be no ship. We are done. Because of you and your dirty promises that brought us here. Doctor. Liar. Fool.
Don't come any closer. Unless you want this flask broken over your head.
No. Oh, I wouldn't want that.
Why, just think, Parrot. Why should you and I fight? We can see this trouble through and win, yet. This calm can't last forever. Besides, there will be only two of us to divide the water now.
Yes, that's true, isn't it? Fenarou kindly leaves us his share, an inheritance. All right. I'll take mine now. My share. Right now, if you please. Later, we'll see.
So be it. Your share.
Many thanks. And now, Fenarou's share. To me, please.
As you say.
And now, another good doctor.
Three. That's enough, Parrot.
No, doctor. It's not enough. Now I'll take the rest.
Parrot! Stop my arm.
I'll kill you if you don't let go. Thank you. You see, I have manners, haven't I? And I have wisdom, too. Because I fooled a very wise man. I toast you, Doctor. The best man wins. That was a bright idea of yours. The best...
So the best man wins, eh, Bert? You forgot I'm a doctor, didn't you? You forgot that a man cannot go without water for 4 days, then drink his fill and live through it, huh? Go on, Parrot. Gasp out your worthless life while I laugh. The best man always wins, Parrot. The best man...
So... best man wins, yes, Doctor. You forgot my knife, didn't you? Forgot me lying at your feet. Gave me up for dead, didn't you? But now it is I, Fenarou, who will outlast the two of you. Yes, my good doctor. The best man always wins.
Fenaru, you fool. The water, it's running out. Hey.
Captain, longboat's back, sir.
All right, send Marteau in.
He's right here, sir.
Bad luck, sir. The raft was here all the time, not 10 miles away from us.
Ah, that calm. Well, where are they, the passengers?
Oh, we're too late. They're all dead.
All dead, huh?
Yes, one stabbed to death, another skull crushed, the other fried by the sun. They're all dead.
Well, then. All the better. Of course, there's nothing to feed.
Yeah, but how are you going
to... Hogsheads, my friend. The hogsheads in the afterhold. Fill them nicely with brine, and there we are.
I don't understand.
Oh, you're dull, Marteau. Very dull. The gentleman's passage is all paid. Before we left Sydney, I contracted to bring back 3 escaped convicts. I'll bring them back. Pickled. So if you'll go back, Marteau, and bring him aboard for the trip, I'll be much obliged.
Very well, sir. Oh, there's a 4th man on the raft, Captain. A Canuck. He's still alive. What'll we do with him?
A Canuck? No word in my contract about any Canuck. Leave him there. He's only a savage.
And so Dr. DuBose and Fenaru and the parrot went aboard for the long trip to their beloved Paris. Their bodies pitching and rolling gently in the huge vats of brine. On the raft, the 4th man raised his head slightly as a wind freshened from the west. He watched until the schooner turned, shaping away for Australia, and disappeared over the rim of the horizon. Then he spread his sail of pandanus leaves and headed his raft eastward, back toward New Caledonia, back toward home. Feeling somewhat dry after his exertion, the native plucked a hollow reed at random from the rushes on his raft. Slowly, lazily, he stretched himself at full length in his accustomed place at the stern. He thrust the reed down deep into one of the bladders underneath the raft and slowly drank his fill of sweet water. He had a dozen such storage bladders remaining, built into the floats at intervals above the waterline. Quite enough to last him safely home again.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson. The 4th man by John Russell was adapted for radio by Irving Ravitch, with Paul Frees as Dr. DuBose, Joe Kearns as Fenaru, and Nestor Paiva as Parrot. Bill Johnstone narrated. The special musical score was conceived and conducted by Cy Feuer. Escape has been presented by the Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations. Be sure to be with us next Monday night when the Radio Theater returns to the air with Betty Davis and Glenn Ford starring in A Stolen Life. Remember, next Monday evening from 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, the Lux Radio Theater starts its 14th year over CBS. The play, A Stolen Life. The stars, Betty Davis and Glenn Ford.
Escape, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 18th of August, 1947, a CBS broadcast. That John Russell story proving to be popular enough that it was repeated on the series less than a year later and again in July of 1949. You're listening to An Hour of Adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark Levonier. Now an episode of Suspense featuring screen star Lloyd Bridges, who at the time was appearing in the television show Sea Hunt. starring as scuba diver Mike Nelson. In that 155-episode run, about halfway through the TV series, he showed up on radio to perform in his fifth and last appearance on the suspense series as a scuba diver. The story is Deep, Deep Is My Love, from April 26, 1959, on CBS.
Suspense. And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
While a small group of astrophysically minded zealots are dreaming and planning and training to go up, 5 million Americans, panoplied like true men from Mars, spend their free time going down under the sea. These are the skin divers intruding upon a world for which nature never intended them, a world of fish and mollusks, of coral and kelp, a world of fantasy, and sometimes a world of death. For there lurks in the deep a greater danger than too little oxygen in the lungs or too much nitrogen in the blood. It is called narcosis, the raptures of the deep. And no man knows its full extent, for no man seized with narcosis has ever returned to the surface to tell about it. Down he goes, ever downward into that silent, dark world of water, seeking only he knows what. Listen, listen then as Lloyd Bridges stars in Deep, Deep Is My Love, which begins in just a moment.
And now, Deep, Deep Is My Love, starring Mr. Lloyd Bridges, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
A man's got a right to be alone once in a while. It isn't too much to ask. A couple of hours of solitude and the weekends poking around the sea bottom with an air tank on your back. Joyce had me the rest of the time, waking and sleeping. Well, that was all right. She was a good kid, and I loved her. But I had made one bad mistake. I taught her to skin dive. Now she even wanted to be with me underwater.
Darling?
Yes, dear.
Why not? Why can't I dive with you?
What could I tell her? That today I had to dive alone, return alone to the deep, to see if I'd gone insane, to see if the beauty below was real or as false as the colors of a kelpfish, to see if the girl was real. No, no, of course she wasn't. And yet, I had to go, and alone. I had to be sure. It's, well, there are dangerous currents out there.
I'm as good a skin diver as you. You said so yourself, and George is bringing some gear for me. He promised.
No, Joyce. Hand me my fins, will you?
Here. If it's too dangerous, I don't want you out there. George said you went too deep last week anyway.
He went just as deep as I did.
Looking for you. He said he got a touch of narcosis.
Narcosis. Raptures of the deep. Too much nitrogen in the blood at too great a depth. Any diver, even a pro, could get it below 100 feet. They say it's a kind of ecstasy. But it could be a deadly ecstasy, luring you downward and downward, spiraling through the swaying greens, through the sapphire blues, to the depths where all was black and white and motionless as death. Had George had it? Had I had it? Was it this that tempted me deeper and deeper? Or was it simple escape? To a world where a man is as truly alone as the crayfish under his rock or the moray eel in his grotto.
What's wrong with you, Don? You've been acting funny all week. Did you have narcosis? Was George right?
No, no, of course not. And I'm going to tell him to stop tailing me around like an anxious porpoise. I've been diving just as long as he has.
Good. Maybe he'll quit and you'll dive with me again. You play tennis with me. You never go skiing without me. We're together every second you're not at work, so why can't
Joyce.
We... Well, I want to know. We do everything together, and now you
maybe
just...
Maybe that's the trouble.
What do you mean?
Hi, kid.
I'll skip it. Here he is.
Well,
hi, Joyce.
Hi, George.
I'm sorry. I had to fill the tanks.
It's okay.
Brought an extra tank. Some gear for you, Joyce.
She isn't coming, George.
Oh? Well, whatever you say, but we could keep it shallow. A lot more lobsters at 30 feet than 200.
She's not coming, George.
Meet King Neptune. That's his world, and he doesn't want any women in it.
You know, Joyce, he was out of my sight in that grotto for 15 minutes last week. Maybe he's got a mermaid down there.
I,
I was after a lobster.
What, a 200? Hey, no kidding, buddy. I'm not following you down there again. Those old nitrogen bubbles started playing tag in my brain. I could hear the angels singing loud and clear. I just about fell in love with a sand shark.
What do you mean?
I had it, man. Nitrogen narcosis. It's cheap drunk with no hangover unless you go all the way, and then it's so permanent. Oh, sir, it's not for me.
There's plenty of warning.
Yeah, sure, but it's such a lovely warning. Real pleasant. Your arms turn numb, you couldn't care less. You maybe hear voices, and you couldn't care less. And the deeper you go, the deeper you want to go, and you couldn't care less. No, sir, make mine martinis. You might drive off a cliff going home, but at least it's quick. So let's keep it a little shallower today, huh? You tell him, Joyce.
I don't care if he finds a tunnel to China. I'm going to look for seashells, if that's all right, Don. I won't get my feet wet.
I watched her start down the beach, head up to hide her disappointment. Lovely brown body swaying as she picked her way through the rocks. I almost called her back. She liked diving. It really wasn't fair to cut her out. But something stopped me. Something calling to me from beyond the rolling surf. Hey, you ready, George?
Yeah, just about. I think you had it too, Don.
What?
Narcosis. When I finally got the guts to go hunting for you, remember where I found you? In the mouth of that cave with a silly look on your face. When I tried to get you to go, you looked like you were going to go for me.
Well, I was looking for something. You ready now?
Yeah.
Don!
Oh, for crying out loud.
What?
Don't go deep!
Oh, I'm telling you, if it isn't you, it's her.
Okay, Joyce!
All right, let's go, huh? The water was warm, and snorkeling on the surface, I could see that it was clear as air below, clear and green, with the giant kelp swaying, beckoning me down. But I pushed ahead to the hole off Point Dume, a bottomless deep astride the great circle course the gray whales take from Goleta Point to the breeding grounds in Magdalena Bay. I had seen whales here, startling as moving reefs suspended between surface and bottom, driven southward, always southward. Driven by the urge to mate. I had seen black sea bass flashing downward at the sound of a boat, and great bat rays gliding deeper than I could follow. And here I had once speared a 30-pound sheep's head. I had nightmares for weeks and remorse, because he was harmless and friendly, and I'd killed him on impulse to bring him back to Joyce. He'd sounded for the deep when I hit him, trying to lose me and retreat to some dark hole to nurse his wound, as all creatures will. But the spearhead held, and I'd taken all the depth that he could find. Now he hung as a reminder in my garage. I hadn't speared a fish since. I hated lately even to drag the big bull lobsters from their holes. It was so much better just to drift along the bottom and look and wonder.
Hey, John, how far are we going?
I pretended that I hadn't heard. To drift and wonder. To drift and wonder in a world of silent creatures who ignored a man as long as he made no hostile move, as long as he left them to their holes. Now, this was a world where a man could hide from supermarkets and freeways and movies and...
Hey, Don, won't this do?
We were over the deep area now. I adjusted my face mask, put my mouthpiece in my mouth, and blew out what water was in my hose. Then I tested the free flow of air from my tank and dove. I was back in my underwater world again. The water caressed me as I dove down 30, 40, 50 feet, heading for a spire of rock to a castle guarding the edge of the underwater canyon of Point Dume. The water turned slowly to light blue, and the cares of the week slipped from my back. I told myself to be content with this. The other thing down there was fantasy. At the spire, I stopped to tickle a starfish, stared into the pink eyes of a golden Garibaldi until he flicked his tail at me and swam away.
joined a school of perch as they started their flight over the canyon. Then I saw it. Just like last week. I told myself that it must be a leaf of kelp far below or some golden-sided fish. But no. I caught the flash of a slim body again, girl-like, turning below, beckoning me down. Another skin diver? No, it was the girl. The girl who had danced in my mind all through the week. I shivered. There were no voices beneath the sea, not even from other divers. But we had talked before, for minutes, hours, an eternity. And she remembered my name. I shivered, fighting the urge to dive deeper. No, I better not. And the voice was gone. She was gone. I had to know. I dove into the canyon, searching for the flash of gold, catching it, losing it, while my arms turned to wings and my body to water, and everything was glorious, shimmering blue. If I could only find her, catch her, the golden girl. The golden girl that I remembered with the lonely, laughing eyes. Wait. Wait for me. Wait.
In a moment, we continue with the second act of Suspense.
Another visit with Joe and Daphne Forsythe.
You're worse than you are, understand?
Joe. Joseph.
What?
Who is she?
Who's who?
Who were you dreaming about?
Was I dreaming?
You were talking in your sleep and giggling.
How about that?
What were you giggling about?
I can't remember.
Joseph, you mentioned a girl's name.
Oh? What name?
Spass.
Spass?
Yes, Spass. Candy Spass. It sounded like a dancer or a striptease or something.
Oh.
Oh, what?
Well, I must have said Candy Spass. Candy Spass is a horse. I bet on him once.
You bet on a horse?
Yeah, we had a pool. I could have won $3.
Well, you should have put the money into savings bonds. They're a much better investment.
It was only 50 cents.
For 63 cents a day, you can buy a $25 bond a month. And 1 year's worth of bonds will bring $300 when they mature. What's more, they're guaranteed to be winners. The whole United States stands behind them.
Uh-huh.
So don't waste money betting on horses. Put it in savings bonds.
Okay. Can I still dream about horses, though?
If you do it quietly. Say, why were you giggling about a horse?
And now, starring Mr. Lloyd Bridges, Act Two of Deep, Deep Is My Love.
I glided around the giant boulders, midnight blue at 200 feet, soared through a lighter blue spotlight of sun filtering through the branches of a giant kelp above. I had somewhere lost her, the golden girl, but I knew that I'd find her again, that she was only teasing. Until I did, it was ecstasy to move suspended in the liquid void, watching my air bubbles form a pearly necklace past my face mask. Amore Eo, rattlesnake of the deep, flashed by, and I waved to him. It didn't seem odd anymore. Words underwater. And I could speak, too. Where are you?
Hiding. What are you laughing at?
I don't know. I just feel like laughing. Where are you?
Can't you see me?
All at once, rounding a reef, I did see her. She was sitting in a shaft of blue sunlight, and all around her towered the age-old rocks of the Dume Deep. Her body was as golden as I had remembered. Her face, half familiar. Her eyes laughing and lonely. This was no thing of the deep, no mermaid of legend. This was a woman, all mankind's woman. And in her eyes was understanding of all men. And I loved her. And feared her at the same time. Who are you? Why do you stay down here?
I told you, because I like it.
Well, aren't you lonely?
I like being alone.
Yes, 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 I do too sometimes. But it seems like I never am anymore.
I know.
How do you know?
I know all about you.
Hey, you don't have a mask. How do you breathe?
I'm used to it.
Where do you stay?
Don't you remember?
Faintly, I remembered a cave in the depths. A dark, warm place of song and peace. Yes, yes, I think I do.
Do you want to go there?
No, I better not.
We'll be alone there.
But I've been down so long, my tanks...
We'll be alone there.
George will be worried.
We'll be alone.
And my wife...
We'll be alone.
Then she was swimming lazily through the boulders, and I was following her to a dimly remembered grotto. At last, we were close together in the dim, watery cave.
You're alone now, Don. You're alone.
I wanted suddenly to kiss her. I fumbled with my mask.
If you take off your mask, you won't be able to see. You might drown.
Come here. Come here.
Wait. There's somebody there.
What?
I can hear somebody outside. We aren't alone.
I peered from the grotto and saw George groping through the shadows, searching. It's my buddy. He's looking for me.
What do
you do? I don't know. What can I do? He found me here once before.
You have a right to be alone.
I know, but what can I do?
If he comes closer, you're as strong as he is. Stronger.
You mean?
You know what I mean.
I crouched in the cave, coiled like a moray eel, ready to strike if he... He peered in, blocking my light, and I tensed. He's gone. Come here. Come to me. She slid into my arms, pliant as kelp, light as water itself.
Aren't you afraid? You've been down so long.
No, I don't care. I don't care.
Wait. What's that?
If he's back, I'll kill him. I'll kill him.
No, it isn't he. It isn't he.
Well, who is it?
It's your wife.
My what? How could she be down here?
They're looking for you. You've been down so long.
What'll I do?
Do you want to go with her?
No. I want her to let me alone. Just for a little while.
She won't. She's even followed you here.
Oh.
She'll never let you be alone.
What'll I do?
You know what to do.
But I love her, you know.
A man has a right to be alone. I'd let you alone.
I backed into the cave and waited. A form moved by the entrance to the grotto, and I saw in the gloom my wife's face, frowning behind a mask, peering and worried. Oh, why can't she let me alone?
She never let you be alone.
All right then. Will you let me alone? Will you let me alone? What are you laughing about?
Now she'll let you alone. Now she will.
What'd I do?
Don't you know?
What? Who is it?
Don't you know it's Joyce?
But she's dead.
Yes, she's dead, Don. She wouldn't let you alone, and she followed you here, and you killed.
No.
It's all right. Nobody knows but me. Come on, Don. Come with me.
No. No.
Leave her. She's dead. Come on, Don. Follow me.
High above was the blessed blue light of the sky. It was an effort to breathe now. And up there was air. Air and life. Here was death. Still death.
Hurry, Don.
Joyce lay near the mouth of the cave with her ripped air hose trickling useless bubbles. And on her face was the look of one asleep in peace. Seeing her there in the narcosis, the crazy rapture passed, and I knew that I must stay. Stay with her under the surging tides.
Come on, Don. Come on.
No, no, no.
Don, come with me. Come with me.
I cradled my wife in my arms. And that is how it has been for minutes, for hours, for an eternity. And a Bonita stared at us for a moment and left. And a school of perch. So I will never be alone. Joyce will be with me always. I will never, never be alone.
Suspense, in which Lloyd Bridges starred in William N. Robeson's production of Deep, Deep Is My Love, written by Hank Searles. Supporting Lloyd Bridges in Deep, Deep Is My Love were Mari Lynn, Tracy Roberts, and Bill Quinn. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 26th of April, 1959 on CBS. And that wraps up this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us again for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. Thanks for listening.